This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during July. First, I'll offer some tips on stargazing. Then we'll check dates for the moon phases, welcome Jupiter and Saturn to the evening sky, and tour the stars of summer. All that in just about 10 minutes. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. Let's start with a pop quiz. At this time of year, is Earth closer or farther from the sun? You might think it's closer because of summer's heat, but don't forget that it's winter right now for everyone living south of the equator. Anyway, early on July 4th is when Earth reaches aphelion, the point in its orbit most distant from the sun. On that date, we're 1.7% farther away than on average. You know, most people think of stargazing as something you have to do with a telescope. Nope, not the case at all. The night sky is beautiful and often breathtaking when you just gaze upward with your eyes alone. So let me offer a few simple tips for getting the most out of what I call eyeball astronomy. As always, you'll see more of the night's offerings if you can find a wide open spot that's far away from bright lights. It doesn't matter whether you go to a neighborhood park or trek far out of town. Anything you can do to get to a darker location will help. And of course, you'll always see more stars when the moon is not bright. Next, if you give your eyes time to adjust to the darkness, you'll see more. You probably know that the pupils of your eyes expand as you get used to the darkness, letting more light reach the retina, and that's part of it. But the sensors that our eyes use for night vision, called rods, respond to dark surroundings by secreting the protein rhodopsin, sometimes called visual purple. Rhodopsin gradually builds up as you stand there in the dark, fortifying the ability of your rods to see faint light. It takes your eyes 30 minutes or longer to become fully dark-adapted. By the way, any blast of white light, like from a flashlight or car headlights, destroys the rhodopsin, meaning that you have to wait for it to build up again. For us northerners, July is a time of long, hot days. When the sky is hazy and stagnant, you'll see that stars don't seem to twinkle very much because we're seeing them through relatively calm air. Astronomers refer to this as good seeing because what you see through a telescope looks steadier than would normally be the case. But when it's hazy, the sky's transparency, or clarity, isn't very good. On the best of nights, the atmosphere is both calm and transparent. That's the best time to enjoy the night sky. Finally, you might wonder how I can say something like, go out around 8 p.m. to see such and such. How can that be true no matter where you are? It's because time zones were created to closely match the sun's location in the sky regardless of your longitude. So what I see in the night sky at 10 p.m. in Boston is almost exactly what you'll see at 10 p.m. in, say, San Francisco. There can be a little difference that depends on your latitude, but for the most part, my stargazing tips will work all across the U.S., or in southern Canada, or in Europe, or even in Asia. But not so much in the southern hemisphere, I'm afraid. Maybe someday, when Sky Tour gets wildly popular, I'll do a version for our stargazing friends in Australia, South America, and southern Africa. Early this month, we'll have a full moon on the night of July 4th. It's called the full buck moon, apparently for the new antlers seen on young male deer at this time of year. Now, technically, there's a lunar eclipse that night, and technically, it is in view across North America, except the Pacific Northwest. But the lunar disk only barely skims through the weakest part of Earth's shadow, called the penumbra. So even at mid-eclipse, the penumbra's dusky shadowing might not be evident at all. But for those of you who want to try spotting it, mid-eclipse occurs at 9:30 p.m. Pacific time and 12:30 a.m. on the 5th for those on the East Coast. After that, last or third quarter moon follows on July 12th and new moon on the 20th. And after that, a lovely lunar crescent returns to the evening sky, with first quarter on the 27th. Around the 23rd, as it's getting really dark after sunset, look for that delicate swoosh of the lunar crescent in the west. Can you make out the moon's entire disk, including all of the real estate hidden in shadow? That ghostly glow is called Earthshine. It happens in the days just before or after new moon, when most of the side of the moon facing us is in darkness. Sunlight reflecting off Earth brightens the lunar night like a giant flashlight, enough so to make the moon's darkened landscape plainly visible to us. Leonardo da Vinci deduced what was happening and drew sketches of this phenomenon some 500 years ago. Yet da Vinci's keen celestial insight wasn't appreciated for nearly two centuries, when a collection of his writings, known as the Codex Leicester, was rediscovered at the end of the 17th century. Meanwhile, if you watch for the moon when it's nearly full, either in the first days of July or at month's end, you might notice that it never gets particularly high in the sky during the night. Geometrically speaking, it's because the plane of the moon's orbit around Earth is oriented closely to Earth's orbit around the sun. The upshot is when the sun rides high in the sky, as it does during summer, the full moon drops closer to the horizon. It's the opposite in winter. The sun is drearily low in the sky, even at noon, but at night the full moon soars high above us. And that, by the way, is true whether you live in Alaska or Argentina. Early in July, if you look around the starry sky after sunset, you won't see a single planet. However, you won't have to wait long to see not one, not two, but three of them. As July opens, the giant planet Jupiter rises within an hour of sundown along the southeastern horizon, opposite the sunset point. Saturn rises in the same location about 20 minutes later. If you figure this must mean they're close together in the sky, you're right. They're only about 6 degrees apart, roughly half the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length. Now, be aware that Jupiter outshines Saturn by 15 times, but it's still a dramatic duo, and they'll be inching closer to each other as the weeks go by. Wait, there's more. About 3 hours after Saturn rises, not long after midnight in early July, watch for Mars, the red planet, to pop into view. As early July slides toward late July, all three of these planets will rise sooner after sunset. In fact, Jupiter reaches the opposition point, rising at sunset, on July 14th, followed by Saturn's opposition on the 20th. After that, they'll be waiting low in the east to greet you every time you look for them as evening twilight fades. Oh, and on July 6th, the just-past full moon joins Jupiter and Saturn to create a dramatic celestial triangle. After the sun sinks from view, and while you're waiting for Jupiter and Saturn to climb into the sky over in the southeast, you can scan the western horizon for some bright stars. Easiest to spot is Arcturus, very bright and most of the way up from the horizon to overhead. Directly below Arcturus, by about three fists, is the icy white star Spica. It's the alpha star in the constellation Virgo, the Maiden. But there's nothing particularly ladylike about this beacon. It's actually two stars whirling around each other so fast and so close that they've distorted each other into egg shapes. And it's a good thing Spica is 850 light years away. It outshines the sun by more than 12,000 times and with intense high energy light. Not the kind of star you'd want to have right next door to our solar system. And here's a little factoid. Spica is represented, along with 26 other stars, on the flag of Brazil. If you're out about an hour after sunset, look well to the right of Spica, along the horizon and upper left of the sunset point, for a considerably dimmer star. That's Regulus, the alpha star of the constellation Leo, the Lion. Now, Leo is seen at its best during springtime, and it's about to sink from view for the rest of 2020. To the left of Spica, also by about five fists, is the bright star Antares, the heart of Scorpius. Can you tell that Antares has a reddish tinge compared to icy white Spica? Antares has its own claim to fame. It's a red supergiant, about 550 light years away, that's one of the largest stars known. It's almost 700 times bigger than our sun. In fact, if you swapped in Antares for our sun, it would take up all the inner solar system out to the orbit of Mars, and then some. In between Antares and the Jupiter-Saturn duo is a group of stars in the constellation Sagittarius that are shaped like a teapot. In fact, that's what astronomers call it, the teapot. Look for four stars in the shape of a trapezoid that form the pot. Highest up is the pointy top, the handle is off to the left, and the spout to the right. The whole thing is a bit bigger than your clenched fist. This is a fairly obvious star pattern, or asterism. None of the stars in the teapot is particularly distinctive, but they all closely match in brightness, and that helps the pattern stand out. Thanks for letting me expand your celestial horizons for another month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, including a free interactive star chart for any time or date, check out our website, skyandtelescope.org. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And if you've enjoyed listening, please leave a rating or review. It'll help spread the word about Sky Tour, and I really welcome your feedback. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, we'll look for steam coming from that celestial teapot and what that has to do with the Milky Way. Until then, I wish you clear skies.